This is Solve It for Kids.
Hello, my amazing and curious friends. My name is Jennifer, and this is Solve It for Kids, the podcast that gives kids and families a peek inside the real world of scientists, engineers, and experts as they solve problems in their jobs using creativity, cooperation, and critical thinking. And now please welcome to the show my podcast partner, Galactic Space Geek, Jeff Gagne.
Hello, Jennifer, and hello, listeners. I am excited about today's show because we have a guest that has one of those jobs that may bring out some of our fears or maybe just the heebie-jeebies.
Well, now I'm really curious. What problem are we solving today?
How do you work with snakes safely?
How do you work safely with snakes? You can count me in the heebie-jeebies, Jeff. Who is our guest today?
This is going to be fun. Today, we have the awesome Travis Land, who is currently a ranger tech at Newport News Park, but is formerly the herpetology curator at the Virginia Living Museum.
Oh, this is so exciting. Welcome to the show, Travis.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
I just think this is so interesting. We're going to talk about herpetology, which, if you've heard the show before, I am not a snake person. However, I'm giving you the chance to kind of change my mind about this. Your question is how do you work safely with snakes? But what I want to know is, did you always like snakes as a kid?
That's a fantastic place to start. Yeah, because of course, yeah, I love the chance to be able to kind of help people overcome that fear. A lot of people have it. And they don't really, you know, there's many people that don't really fully understand why they're so nervous around snakes. They just know, like, the word snake just invokes this big reaction in a lot of people.
Panic.
It is panic, exactly. I will say, you know, I can't really recall way, way back when. I remember, you know, I loved going outside and kind of seeing animals in their natural elements. I was always a little bit more, I felt more of a kinship with turtles, so I always focused on them.
Okay.
That kind of branched out towards a lot of different directions, and snakes included, because I always thought they were very interesting. But in my family, my parents actually, very, very nervous around snakes. My dad would always jump every time he would step on a stick. He'd jump about 5 feet in the air. You know, I learned more about it over time, seeing them in the wild, and especially, you know, when I started working at the Virginia Living Museum, getting a lot more hands-on experience with them. Because up until then, I was mostly focused with turtles, but I do have an appreciation for all animals and their place in the environment. There's such a fantastic diversity. You know, every animal is just so unique and interesting.
I will agree with that. Yes.
Yeah.
Very cool.
So I did. From a young age, I always had that sort of inclination to learn more. And I'll admit, you know, when I first started working with some of the snakes, especially some of the more temperamental ones at the museum, there was a little bit of a learning curve. There was one snake in particular, a pine snake that was an albino. His, you know, he had very poor eyesight.
Right.
And they hiss very loudly. Like, you could hear anytime I would go in to kind of feed him or clean his enclosure, you could hear him hissing from down the hall.
Oh my gosh.
He would curl up and he would always kind of react to people being there because, you know, he was a bit stressed out. So there was a bit of a learning curve.
Okay. We know that you really liked animals and you were okay with snakes from growing up. Where did you grow up in the United States? And are there different snakes across the country? So, like, Jennifer's in Florida, I'm in Colorado. Are there different snakes where our listeners would be in the country?
Absolutely. Yes. Yeah. Florida is a great place, actually, if you want to go see.
That is great.
It's great. Yeah.
Not for snakes.
Well, it is if you really like snakes. Colorado is not a bad place either. I've always been a Virginia kid.
So I grew
up East Coast, Virginia Beach, born, and then moved to the mountains, raised there, and then now back in the coast, kind of around the Newport News area.
When you were a kid, what kind of snakes were around that you got to experience?
A lot of the smaller ones. When I moved up to the mountains, of course, they get a little bit bigger.
Okay.
Going into the woods up there, getting away from the urban environment. Because, anywhere around there, you just see a lot of the smaller, like, ringneck snakes or, like, some of the ones that, you know, like, are very small kind of insects or worms or things like that. When you get up to the mountains or, you know, even get into a little bit more wilderness, you see some of the larger black rat snakes.
Okay.
And racers and things of that nature.
Yeah. So we have here, I mean, it is Florida. So we have snakes, we have, you know, alligators, all this kind of stuff. And even though I live in a fairly urban place, we have preserve areas around. So you'll see snakes sometimes. And I think they're called black racers. We've seen them around, if that makes sense, around here. But one of our neighbors across the street one time had a water moccasin in their pool. That was really interesting. My question is, when you see a snake in the wild, what do you do besides run screaming from it? You know?
Well,
what is the best way to, if you wanted to look at it?
Yeah,
dear listeners, not everybody has to do that.
Yeah, if it was me in that situation, I'd instantly get out my camera, start taking pictures.
There you go.
So you're out in the wild and you come across the snake you weren't expecting to see out on a trail or, in this case, in your pool or maybe itself on a back porch. That happens. I've gotten calls about that in the past. A lot of people, you know, taken pictures of them and sent them in for identification. A lot of the time, if someone's really worried about it being venomous, it's actually probably not venomous. You know, odds are a lot of the snakes that people tend to see around their houses, not usually the venomous ones. A lot of the venomous species in the U.S., especially down the East Coast, do tend to like to stay either towards water, like a water moccasin, in the deep woods, like a copperhead, things like that. So what do you do if you see one is try not to panic. You got to kind of get into their mind for a split second because, I mean, to them, we are these like very large Godzilla monsters coming straight towards them, you know. And if you're an animal that sees other large animals in the wild, almost certainly it's going to be something that could probably eat you. So you really don't want to stick around and find out what's going to happen. Or in case of some snakes, they think, oh my gosh, this is it. I've got to do what I can to survive. So they may shake their tail. In the case of a cottonmouth, they get their namesake because they'll open their mouth very wide and to try to look intimidating and scare people away.
It works.
Yeah, and certainly it is. There you go. See, you're a large potential predator, so it seems to scare us away.
I would leave.
Could work for other things. And it does work. And that's why they do it. Very rarely will they actually take off towards the person. Because I have heard that anecdote that people get chased by snakes. There's like a tiny grain of truth to that, but it is actually a myth. Snakes do not want to chase something that they think is going to eat them. That makes sense, right?
Yeah.
So they know where they came from. They follow scent trails and they kind of forge their path through the woods.
Okay.
So they know where safety used to be. And they are going to get back to that location because if they go in an area they're not familiar with, game's over. They come up to an obstacle they weren't intending and the predator catches up with them. That's it.
Okay. That makes sense.
They're going to make for where they think safety is. There is a chance that path may be directly heading in your general direction. So if that happens, again, try not to panic. Just try to sidestep,
get out of the way. Yeah.
Try to move at a tangent. So just sort of
perpendicular.
Perpendicular. Thank you. So most likely the snake is just going to pass on by without bothering because it really doesn't want to mess with you. And especially venomous snakes, the venom that they have, it is an incredibly expensive thing for their body to make. It takes a long time for their body to produce it. And once they have it, they mostly are just using it to help digest their prey and to help them eat. They really don't want to use it unless absolutely necessary, unless they think it
is.
I didn't know that. Yeah. Okay, that makes sense.
You got to think about things from their perspective.
Snake. Okay.
Think like a snake. It's just, arguably, it's hard for us to do. But yeah, it makes so much sense. Yeah, it is such a precious resource to them. They really don't want to waste it. So they're just going to go their way. And if you leave them alone, you know, they'll leave you alone.
Okay. So for a lot of our listeners that may not have the fondest thoughts of snakes, to include Jennifer, what would you like, top one or two things? You just kind of mentioned one of the myths that snakes don't chase people. And then we both just learned something, that their venom is very valuable to them and they'd rather use it to eat rather than defend themselves. What would be one or two other things that you would like all of the rest of us to know about snakes that most of us probably don't know?
Sure. Well, let's see. Well, snakes are very valuable to have around. They have a role in the ecosystem, you know, just like any other animal.
Right. But
I've gotten calls in the past from people that are worried that a snake is nesting underneath of their house, that they're creating, and you know, they kind of snakes like mice or rats, that they create these elaborate nests that, you know, they just generate more. But most snakes, especially in Virginia and certainly in other parts of the U.S., they're mostly solitary. You know, once they hatch, kind of go their separate ways and are looking for food. When they stop off, maybe around where people also live, there's usually a reason for it. So woodpiles tend to attract other things like mice and rats,
which may
start venturing into the garage and other areas. So when you see a snake, it's not that they're building this den underneath the house to, you know.
They're looking for food.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Come to think of it, anytime I have come across a snake, I've never come across a family of snakes.
No.
Like, I live in Colorado, and I drove home, and there are 6 deer in my front yard just eating the grass. They travel around together. I have never seen more than one snake at any given time.
No, I don't think I have either.
Thought about that before.
Yeah, well, it's competition for resources. The only time snakes usually will kind of cohabitate or be with other snakes is kind of a short checklist. You know, it's basically a male possibly looking for a girlfriend. And another one is when winter comes around, because snakes are reptiles and reptiles are cold-blooded animals. So, you know, they
That makes sense.
Many snake species will cohabitate in the same, will sort of overwinter in the same den. So you may have a rattlesnake in the same den with a copperhead and a black rat snake.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, get along, you know, just kind of curl up and try their best to stay out of the winter and stay out of the cold, and then come out once it starts warming back up again.
See, everybody, snakes can be cuddly.
As
long as they're not cuddly with me, I'm okay with that. So as your job as a herpetologist, I'm assuming you had to handle snakes. So can you explain, like, how does this work? Can you pick them up with your bare hands? Do you use the hook thing or whatever that's called?
It's actually just called a snake hook.
Okay. Could you talk to us a little bit about that and how that works when you're handling a live snake?
Absolutely. Every snake species is kind of different. So obviously, I'm not going to go in and pick up a venomous snake just with my bare hands. There's no reason for me to do that. I know a lot of professionals in the field, that's definitely a thing that a lot of professionals avoid nowadays, is free handling of venomous snakes, because there's really not much of a reason to do that. So working with the tools that we have, like those snake hooks, which are on basically just, you know, sort of rounded hooks on the end of long sticks that we use to kind of scoop the snake up, and they sit, you know, kind of comfortably like they're sitting on a tree branch. As we kind of move them from one place to the other. Some species are a little bit better about it than others, you know, certainly ones that climb in trees a lot.
Sure.
Know what's going on, so they kind of adjust to it. Others may, kind of dwell on the ground almost exclusively or dig into the ground, you know, might be lifted up by a hook and they're like, I don't know really what to do with this. You might have to help them a little bit more. But yeah, and that way, you know, there's really no part of any equation where I could get bit, because there's just no way for the snake to reach me. It's not getting stressed out because I'm not, you know, going in to try to grab them and restrain them, which snakes don't like.
Right. And that's what I was saying, is it's probably safer for the snake too, to use the snake hook, right? And keeps them more calm.
Absolutely. Yeah. Because again, you just kind of switching brains for a second, and you imagine like this large person coming in and taking their hand and trying to pick them up. And to them, that large hand looks very much like a bird. And birds are, for a lot of snake species, are very dominant predators of snakes. So, you know, if you're going in there, kind of that.
Yeah. I was trying to remember where I was. It might have been when we were down at Kennedy Space Center. They, you know, they have a big, huge preserve area. And we saw a bird carrying a snake. It had picked it up and I'm assuming it was going to go eat it somewhere or something. It was kind of the crazy / coolest thing because you see the bird flying and then we're like, what? My husband and I were like, I was like, oh my God, is that a snake? Like, I mean, I'm assuming that's what it was. It didn't look like it was a stick and I can't imagine why the bird would have picked up a stick or whatever, but I'm assuming that that was a snake that it had captured and off it went.
Sure, very important food source for a lot of birds. So, yeah, so that's why going in with the hand and kind of hesitating a bit too, you know, that's sort of one of the things that I think about when going in to lift up the snake, if I need to move them, is, you know, you may have heard that sort of anecdote, like dogs or other animals can kind of sense when people are nervous. And snakes, I think that mostly comes from that sort of hesitation that people have, like you're going in to reach, they may move slightly, and then you kind of stop and back up a little bit. Because if you think about it, a predator would try to test the defenses of something that it was trying to prey upon. So it would try to come in. It might not be very sure. So, you know, if you think about it from that perspective, best thing to do is, you know, how can you assure the snake without being able to verbally communicate at all or it understanding you? How can you assure him that you mean him no harm? So my method was always just sort of try to approach a different way. I went in more of the scooping method, which was, you know, I just kind of come in from a bit of a distance, kind of dig up under him and lift him up, because that's not really a predatory behavior.
That's true. Yeah.
Yeah. I tried to make it a nice fluid motion without me, you know, really sitting there and hesitating or going back. And because, you know, any nervousness that I had would, you know,
be transmitted.
Pick up on that.
So this is fascinating for me, actually. I'm learning a lot. Yeah. Never studied snakes in any way. I'm thinking that most people's experience with snakes is in museums, in different,
zoos,
different places
like
where
that.
They will see, exactly, where they will see snakes that are being cared for. As I think about that, to ask this question, most of the time you go see the snake in its environment and they are very sedentary. They don't move a whole, they're not snow snakes. They're not moving around a whole lot. Yeah. Is there either a time of day, like, is there ever a good time to go see the snakes? Or is the best time, like, to see if the zoo or that place will have a guided, like, come touch the snake activity sort of thing?
Absolutely, yeah. And especially in zoos and aquariums, I think, you know, not a lot of people really think about that, but getting there earlier in the morning, sort of that mid-morning period where a lot of heat starts coming on in their enclosures, things start warming up, because a lot of snakes that are active during the day will be active sort of in that morning period as things warm up, but during the real high heat of noontime, they may kind of escape from that, or they may not be as active because it's maybe a little bit too hot for them, or their preferred prey may not be out during that time. They're usually a little bit more active in sort of that mid-morning and then mid-afternoon period. I'd recommend getting there early, because that's also when, you know, especially a lot of zoos, there's so much to do all the time. Never-ending list of things that you can do for the animals. I know a lot of places will, and we certainly did this, was try to feed a lot in the morning.
Yeah.
So they were going to be especially active if it's a feeding day for them.
Feeding time.
Yes.
Yeah. And some zoos will have scheduled feeding times for some of those animals, especially maybe the reptile house or something like that. They'll pick a day of the week and kind of go through and do feeding demonstrations. Because snakes, they don't quite eat as often as other animals. They may only need to eat maybe once a week, depending on the snake. Sometimes once every other week, if it's a larger snake.
Oh, wow.
In the wild, I know some species can go like once a month or only a couple of times a year just feeding if it's a large enough prey.
Wow.
They're very energy efficient.
I didn't know that.
Oh my gosh.
So this might be a dumb question. So in the zoo where we are, they have a reptile house, and I know a lot of zoos have their own reptile house. Why is it dark in the reptile house?
Oh, yeah, that's an excellent question.
I always wondered that. Right. To me, I felt like it was the atmosphere, right? Oh, my gosh, it's dark. But I'm assuming there's a scientific reason, maybe.
Absolutely, yeah. No, that is a great question. Because, yeah, it's usually from the visitor's side. There are some snake species that are nocturnal. So, you know, I'd imagine if any zoo is exhibiting them, they want to try to keep their light cycle kind of synced up with the snake, because they can kind of cue into a lot of the other ambient light out where the visitors are. And if they're nocturnal, if they're seeing a lot of light during the day and they have other light at night, then that can kind of confuse them a little bit. And a lot of places will kind of adjust their light cycle a little bit so that they can be active during a part of the day when visitors arrive.
And still
get their normal like nighttime cycle. I think for the most part, though, for many places, it's also because it reduces their stress being able to see so clearly a lot of large creatures moving past them all the time.
Oh, I never thought of that.
So they're just seeing like their immediate environment, which is almost always well lit, you know, because they're passing animals. So they love the sun. So they like staying in that light a lot of time. So having a dimmer guest area makes it a little bit less stressful for them, just constantly seeing a bunch of moving people go by.
I did not know that. That actually makes me feel better about them being dark. It's better for the animals. I like that.
They're not trying to be sneaky. They're just you know, easily stressed out.
I feel like you're bringing Jennifer around on snakes a little bit.
I never expect to get all the way to converting somebody from a hesitation to a snake enthusiast, but there are just so many cool things. Snakes are just so cool. You know, they really do get a bad reputation a lot of times. And for many people, I know it is almost an instinctual fear.
Yeah, I think so.
It goes many layers. You know, a lot of people may not even be able to verbalize exactly what they find unsettling about the way a snake moves or its appearance or even the word snake. Sometimes like when I was kind of working as an interpreter, and I still kind of do this on occasion, I kind of go down a rabbit hole of trying to see, is like, well, did you, you know, kind of asking the guests that I'm talking to, did you ever have an experience in your childhood? Like, did you ever get like maybe accidentally bit by a non-venomous snake or something like that? Did you have a sibling that threw a fake snake at you when you were young and it just always stayed in your head? And
would be that, because I had three brothers, so I'm sure there were bugs and snakes issues. Sorry, guys.
That's great. I love that you turned into a little bit of an investigator there. So I got to ask, what is the coolest snake that you've had a chance to work with?
See, that is such an interesting question. Now, that's almost like asking a favorite movie or something, or favorite music, because, you know, there's just so many cool things out there.
First one that pops into your head.
First one I would say was probably the monocle cobra that we have.
Wow.
A cobra,
yeah. Very large, you know, monocles get very, very large. And cobras are just
how large?
Easily 6 to 8 feet long.
What?
How big are the hoods, right? They have hoods.
Well, it's proportional to their, you know, sort of body length. So it's, you know, they maybe a few inches wider when they actually like kind of sit up and.
I mean, they're amazing looking creatures. I just would not want to touch one. But great respect for them. They're beautiful, but woo!
Absolutely. Yeah, well, and they are venomous, so certainly not one I would recommend touching either. Cobras are so clever, and they actually have done a few different studies on cobras. And one zoo in particular, I remember reading an article where they trained their cobras to come out of their enclosure for feeding. And they intended to do it to help with the safety of the people working with them, because, of course, venomous snakes, you don't want anybody to accidentally get in venom or anything like that. What's the safest way that you can do that? And, you know, a lot of times training the animals to kind of move to safer enclosures is a great way to do that. And it turns out cobras are especially keen on being able to learn how to target train and to learn those behaviors. And they even discovered something they weren't expecting, was that the cobras, because they had three of them in the exhibit, they had a set hierarchy, sort of a pecking order amongst them.
Really?
Each time they would target the snake out of the enclosure, the same snake would always come first, and then next followed up by the second snake, which was always the same one, and then lastly followed by the third one. And they didn't know why they followed this order. They assumed there just must have been some sort of, like I said, pecking order, like something into making a hierarchy where they said, no, this guy's always first. He's the big guy. He goes first.
I mean, that's pretty cool. As much as I'm not interested in interacting with snakes personally, I do have a healthy respect for them. And I agree with you that they absolutely are a necessary part of a healthy ecosystem. I just don't want them anywhere near me. Having said that, I have to say one of the coolest experiences I've ever had with a snake. I was indoors looking outside, but around our house, we have a hedge, around our garage, we have shrubs that are a hedge. Mm-hmm. And one day I was sitting in my office and I happened to look outside and there was, I believe it was a black racer snake. It's sitting there and all of a sudden you could see like it was sitting up kind of like a cobra, like its head sticking straight up and then, its body straight up and then its head sticking out. And I was like, what is that? I was like, is that part of my downspout? Oh my gosh, that's a snake. And it was laying on the top. So the rest, it was probably a good 6 feet long, 5-6 feet long. It was pretty long. And it was just sunning itself, but it was hysterical because its head was just up in the air and it was just poking just its head out like this. So yes, I did grab the camera, took the picture through the window, did not open the door. Right. But I have to say stuff like that is just really cool to see with snakes. So I could see how people think. My husband has held one of those big, huge yellow boa constrictors.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Python. Big python. It was a birthday party, right? Where they bring animals to your house. And he is so proud of that picture that, I mean, but it was huge. How big around did they get? They were big.
Oh, yeah. I mean, just the girth. I mean, it's practically like thickness like of a football, basically.
Yeah, like two hands across or something.
Yeah.
And he also said the other thing is it was heavy.
Yeah.
Like, how much do you think one of those weighs?
A couple hundred pounds, typically.
Wow.
And they can get, reticulated pythons are, one of the world's largest species. And they're usually the ones that people like to bring out because they are, that very, very impressive. They can be, kind of get used to being ambassadors, being fairly mild mannered and everything. So that's why a lot of people kind of use them for that. But yeah, they are incredibly large and impressive animals and very, very heavy. That's why usually working with large snakes, which I, that was one thing I wish I could have done more. We did work with very large, a reticulated python a couple of times, but, we never had them as an ambassador during my time there. And some of my colleagues, I'd kind of talk to them about it and see how they do this kind of work with them. And it was always this group effort. There's no way, there's really
things.
You got to have the buddy system with you when working with those snakes because they are very large, just like would for any other very large predator.
It was amazing. I mean, we could talk about snakes forever, actually. So even though I was like, this was a fascinating conversation, but I'm curious, do you have a challenge for our listeners that they can do to learn about animals or something?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it fits in great with what we've talked about already. Snakes always are those sort of that underdog in the world where people do have that fear of them. Then spiders and a few other animals, people just, it just seems to put people on edge.
Yes.
And I would challenge anybody, if you do have that nervousness or, that response to a type of animal, the best way to overcome something like that is to learn more about it. That's just really good universal rule. It seems like just, understanding what kind of getting in the mind of that animal and understanding why it acts the way it acts and why it behaves that way. So, go to an aquarium. Go to the zoo, see them safely up close, so you don't have to be too nervous about any interaction or any unwanted interaction.
Yeah. Sure.
Watch a nature documentary, kind of see how they behave. And if you see one, someone out at a zoo, aquarium, or nature center with an animal that makes you nervous, maybe go up. You don't have to directly go up and touch them immediately, but just say hi and learn a little bit about them, just stick around
like
for a little bit.
Yeah, I like that idea.
Yeah. Very simple, nice, easy way to take some baby steps forward.
Exactly. Every little bit helps.
Very good. And I think you've already helped Jen take a few of those baby steps by teaching us some things today. This has been great.
Awesome. Yes. I've done my job. That's well, very glad.
Yes. Next time we go to the zoo, I'll make sure I go through the reptile house. So there you go. This has been amazing. Thank you so much for being on Solve It for Kids, Travis.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me. It's been a blast.
Well, if that wasn't one of the most fun episodes, with Jennifer learning so much about snakes, but still having those heebie-jeebies, I bet. But I will say first that there are some animals that are out there that I need to go learn more about with Travis's challenge. For me, I'm not a big fan of picking up insects that are in my house to move them back outside. So I'm going to pick a couple of insects and learn about them. What about you, Jennifer?
Well, I did like his challenge. And yes, I did learn a lot about snakes. I mean, I don't know if it got rid of my heebie-jeebies. I've touched snakes before. There are probably a few other animals that I might need to learn a little more about. But what I'm curious about is what animals our listeners might be researching and looking up. So I'm hoping that maybe some of you will share that with us. Make sure you go to our website, solveitforkids.com, for this episode. You can learn more about Travis. And also, we'll have some more information about some of the snakes he talked about, right?
Yes, he talked about a lot of cool snakes and a lot of cool facts about them. So, in addition to our website, if you guys are picking up a snake or touching a snake, or if you find one, be sure to share those pictures with us on our social media. At Kids Solve on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. We love talking to our listeners. And until next time, we will see you on
Solve It for Kids.